Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Zero to Agile. In this episode, I sit down with Lee Brandt to talk about barriers to collaboration and communication and what we can do to resolve them. I am your host, Phil Jupixi. This episode is brought to you by Telerik TeamPulse, project management software based on Agile best principles. And you can find more information at www.telerik.com/TeamPulse. That's TELERIK.com/TEAMPULSE. Thanks for listening. Now on to the interview. I am here in Redmond at the Microsoft MVP Summit 2012 with a very good friend of mine, Lee Brandt, who's a fellow MVP. And we were having a great discussion last night about Agile, and I thought, I wish I had my recorder with me, and I didn't. So here we are. I've got my recorder, and we're going to talk about barriers to collaboration. And before we get into the subject matter at hand, I'm going to let Lee introduce himself. Lee, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. My name's Lee Brandt. I'm a C-Sharp MVP, and I'm a process lead coach with Adventure Tech in Kansas City. We do a lot of helping with agile transformations within organizations, so that's one of the things that got me talking about this last night. So,
Great. So one of the things that we talked about was, you know, the relation that people, and they've done this for years, right, that writing software is like building a bridge or making a car. It's, you know, it's manufacturing as opposed to maybe craftsmanship.
Yeah, right? We're trying to find an analogy that helps us to manage the process, right?
Right.
So, and all the analogies that people come up with for software are usually manufacturing analogies, so... but the problem is that the manufacturing doesn't really fit 100%, and we end up trying to force software into fitting that manufacturing mentality.
So tell me about some of your thoughts on how it doesn't fit.
Well, one of the biggest things is just the fact that manufacturing is about a repeatable process, right? It's about being able to repeat and crank out the same thing over and over again 100,000 times without any variation in the process, right? Whereas software is really about creating something new that hopefully nobody's ever created before. If somebody else has created it before, then you should be looking at maybe buying theirs or using theirs. But if you're creating something that nobody's ever created before, then that kind of really falls outside of the scope of manufacturing and falls into more research and design or design and development.
Well, you can say that you're not creating the same thing each time, but devil's advocate here. I have built in my career a ton of e-commerce websites.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? They had a catalog. They had a payment page. They had, you know, some contact me information. And, mm-hmm. and one could argue, and just for the listener's sake, I'm not arguing this because I happen to agree with Lee, but it makes it more interesting if we pretend like we don't agree, that... you know, I'm just, it's a cookie cutter. It's an e-commerce site.
Absolutely. And there's lots of, I think there's lots of managers and customers that think the same thing. Well, I just want something like Amazon.
Right.
How hard could that be? I've seen lots of sites that have catalogs. I've seen lots of sites that have shopping carts. I've seen lots of sites that have credit card managing. How hard could it be? Well, it's not really that hard. And honestly, if that's all you're building is just a way for you to sell your products, then your website is not going to be the thing that differentiates you. Your products are going to differentiate you. So go out and buy an e-commerce package and just deploy it. You'll save a whole lot more money than trying to find somebody like us to build it, right?
Yeah, that's true. You know, because if you get the argument, I want something just like Amazon, then what's going to bring your customers to your site versus just going to Amazon, which is a known entity, right?
Absolutely, right.
So the other thing that we were talking about in the manufacturing, and I think we could probably go on for hours about how software and manufacturing are different, but
yeah.
Really we wanted to talk about barriers of collaboration,
mm-hmm.
and how, you know, some of the manufacturing parallels or paradigms that have been brought into software development have really helped create those silos and prevent us from collaborating. And
absolutely.
You had some great ideas about that, and I'd love to hear them.
Well, I mean, one of the big things is when we start trying to make the collaboration, or trying to make the transition from manufacturing to software, trying to make software fit a manufacturing mindset, on the very first thing we start to do is try and create that assembly line, right? So we've got design, we've got developers, we've got database guys, we've got project managers, we've got QA people, we've got user testers, and those become our pipeline for the software. And I'm not arguing the pipeline. What I'm arguing is those pipelines become departments within an organization. And pretty soon, those departments grow to the point where there are several projects going on at once, and they become those silos that you are able to throw things over the wall and not collaborate with. Once you've created departments and department heads, now they have bonuses or things that are based on their department's performance and not the company's performance. Right, so now they have a vested interest in making sure that their department does best. Now you're creating serious barriers to collaboration because their bonus is based on how well their department does, not how well we all do.
Right, so essentially there's a bunch of little fiefdoms in mm-hmm. the kingdom, and everybody is a baron or, you know, a lord or lady over their fiefdom. And so if their fiefdom doesn't do well, right, they're the ones that feel like they're getting in trouble, but they're not looking at the bigger picture, where at the end of the day, it's not how well you tested it or how well you documented it, but it's how well you've served your customers.
Absolutely, and it's how well you've served the company, right? How much value have you delivered to the company today versus how many tests did your QA team run, or, you know, how many milestones have you met in the last 6 months? You can meet all the milestones you want, but if you haven't delivered any value as a company, then the company goes under, and great, you just project managed yourself right out of a job.
So going back to, you know, the different silos, if we think about, you know, what I'm going to call traditional software development, where you've got a requirements phase and then a design phase and then perhaps a construction phase and then a QA phase or a testing phase, right? And typically in that scenario, you don't have a whole lot of communication going on.
Right.
Somebody at the start of the line is writing some requirements. Then they hand that off to somebody else, maybe an architect who then designs it, who then hands that off to a developer, who then will punt that over the wall, right? And each Absolutely. Of these phases, there's a wall in between, and we're literally throwing stuff over the wall, and there's no way to get it back. And especially apparent when we go into QA, in what I call the ping pong testing phase, right?
Yes.
So I'm going to write some code. I'm going to throw it over the wall. QA is going to take 2 to 4 weeks to test it. I can't be working on features while they're doing that, so I am trying to see if I can get my Xbox Live score up, you know, while this is going on. Of course, we'll know we're probably playing Doom because we can't bring an Xbox into work. And then they're going to throw it back over the wall at us, you know, in the sense of a list of bugs. And then we're going to then, you know, play some more ping pong by testing it some more, throwing it back over, or coding some more, throwing it over the wall, and eventually we'll get to a point where we can release this thing.
Yeah. Right?
So at least at that phase, you usually have some back and forth,
mm-hmm.
right? Not necessarily good back and forth. Whereas the other two phases, it's really requirements get thrown over the wall to the design team, who then throws it over all development, and then so at least you've got some back and forth. It's certainly not a rapid feedback loop, but there is a loop.
Yeah. Well, and one of the analogies that we use all the time is that throwing it over the wall. And I think that people, we've used it so much that people forget what's actually going on there. I mean, by throwing it over the wall, literally, if I were throwing it over the wall, I would have no chance to communicate to you what my intentions were or what I actually thought the solution might be. I may have an idea what I think the solution might be for you as a tester, or for me as a tester, I might have a solution or an idea for a solution for you as a programmer, but I have no opportunity to communicate that to you because I'm literally throwing it over the wall. Here, what we're doing in software is I'm giving you those tests back saying this failed, and that's all I'm telling you is this didn't work, right? So there's no communication of, okay, what were we trying to do? What were we expecting to get done? I went to a lunch it was probably about a year ago now. It was great. I think it was put on by Rally and a couple of other people, but they were talking about collaboration, and we played this game where we divided up between developers and QA people, and we were doing a crossword puzzle, and the developers had the questions, and the QA people had the crossword puzzle. And so we would take the questions, we would try and answer them as many as we could in 2 minutes, right? That's our iteration size. Then we take all of our questions and our answers and we give them to the QA people and they test them to see if they fit into the spaces in the crossword puzzle. If they don't, they just write on them, that's not right, and they send it back to the developers. While we're developing the next 2 minutes worth of question and answers, they're trying for 2 minutes to see if they can get those answers to fit. We went through about 4 or 5 iterations of about 2 minute iterations, and I think the highest any team got was like 5, right? Then the developers and the QA people sat together, right? And still the developers answered the questions and the QA people tried to fit them into the boxes. But what we would do is, since we were sitting right there with each other, I would say, here's the question, you know, Mary had a little blank, and I would say, how about goat? And they would say, no, it's got to start with an L. Oh, then it must be lamb, right? So it was easier for us to get that feedback cycle very short. And I think the lowest at that point we had was about 12 from the teams that all, and one of them almost had the puzzle completed, right, in a couple of 2 minute iterations. And that speaks volumes to the value of collaboration. And of course, people see the absurdity of it when they're doing something like a crossword puzzle. But for some reason, they don't see the absurdity when they're building software, which is much more complicated than doing a crossword puzzle, right?
Right. And so, you know, what I always kind of point back to when I was still doing a lot of development and leading teams is, so often I would see developers get bug reports back from users, from QA, whatever, and then, you know, take a stab at it, and the answer was probably, you know, a good half of the time, no repro, right? I can't reproduce it, so it must not be a bug, so we're going to ignore it.
Works on my machine.
Works on my machine, right? So it's something that's, you know, if you don't have that communication, right, and that collaboration, then there's no way you're going to understand the bugs, right? Because we all have context in our heads, right? We all, you know, I think I've mentioned it on this podcast before, but one of the hardest assignments I ever had in college was a professor said, midterm exam is to write a paper, it was a technical writing class, describing how you tie your shoe. And we're like, ooh, that's pretty easy. He says, yeah, if I read your paper verbatim and do exactly what it says and my shoe is tied, you pass. If I read your paper and my shoe ends up not being tied, you fail. Guess how many people passed?
Very few.
Zero. Right?
Nice.
Because we all have context in our head. So when we try and document something like a bug or requirement or even a design spec, right, if we're not actually talking to people and able to have that feedback and ask questions back and forth, then we don't get the benefit of that context. And we only see the words on the page.
Absolutely. Right? And not only are you not even collaborating, then it almost becomes adversarial, right? So when the QA people punt their bugs back over the wall, the developers automatically start getting defensive, and that's where a lot of those no repros come from. This guy's just an idiot. He couldn't reproduce it. I can't reproduce it. He must just be an idiot.
Yep, he did something wrong.
Yeah.
Right? Or better yet, no, that's not what the requirement said.
Yeah.
You didn't understand the requirement. It works exactly as planned.
Yeah.
Right? So we've talked about a lot of the problems, and yes. You know, I don't want to leave people hanging that, you know, listen to this podcast and get all depressed and, you know, not want to do software anymore. Tell me how
bunch of emo agile kids.
Yeah, tell me how, you know, agile in your opinion, or certain parts of agile, right? Because agile is this big giant thing, big A, little A, Kanban, Lean, Scrum, XP, right? All these different things.
Absolutely.
But distilling it down just to some core concepts, what can we do, you know, even if we're not a full-blown Agile shop, what can we do, or what can our listeners do to break down some of these barriers?
The very first thing, and this is kind of a Kanban-y, lean-ish type thing, but I think it's good for any organization to go through. All these agile processes are really ways for us to improve how we get software done, right? So the very first thing you need to do is figure out where you're at now. A lot of the times that means mapping your value stream, and that's a really fancy way of saying write down how you do it now, Right. So let's figure out what the steps are we go through to develop software. Then the very next thing is figuring out where you would like to be. Ideally, where, how would you like to develop software? If you could do whatever you wanted, what would your process look like? Now you can start looking at what are the things that keep you from being that ideal shop. And I think without a starting point and an end point, it's almost impossible to improve. And once you sit down and write down what your process is now, that can start to create that collaboration, because a lot of don't be afraid of arguments. Obviously, don't let them get heated, but don't be afraid of arguments when Jim from QA says, no, that's not how we do it. That's not what we do. Don't start with the, you know, oh, yes, you do. Every time we do, you know, you don't need to get your neck going and get all ghetto on somebody. What you need to do is say, okay, well, that's what I thought you were doing. So what are you doing? Just be completely open with each other, and writing down that process can start to open those collaborations, because all of a sudden you know what Jim's doing for a living as a QA guy, and you're like, oh, wow. Well, I just thought Jim was a total jerk, but it turns out Jim's been doing it that way because that's the way his whole department does it, right? And when we started talking about it, and his boss started talking about it with us, his boss saw how idiotic that was. It made complete sense when they didn't realize how we were doing what we were doing. But once they started talking to us and saying, oh, that's how you're doing it? Oh, well, then we should be doing this instead. That makes total sense.
So what kind of things then help with that communication? So I totally understand that you've got to understand where you are and where you want to be, right? Because if you're just floundering, you're never going to find any improvement.
Absolutely. Right?
And one of the things that I've said often, I'll probably get some comments on the website about this, but I don't know that Agile fixes a single thing so much as Agile enables you to fix your problems.
Yeah, it right? gives you the tools to help you.
It's going to expose them. It's going to, you know, allow you to measure them and those types of things, and it's going to facilitate fixing those problems.
Absolutely.
So from a developer QA standpoint, I think, you know, if I hear what you're saying correctly, just sitting together, right? And not necessarily co-located, but working together. Like if there's a bug you don't understand or a bug report, instead of just getting irate and saying no repro, you know, walk over to that tester and say, hey, you filed this bug. I'm not understanding it because I think it's working the way it's supposed to be working. And if you come with that approach, check your ego at the door.
Right? Absolutely.
You know, one of the things I've always told people in my talks is I hear this my code comment all the time. And when I was running teams, I would not allow you to say my code. Anytime you said my code, you had to bring in donuts the next day. Because at the end of the day, right, whose code is it? Unless you are self-employed and self-funded, right, you're paying yourself out of, you know, some inheritance or whatever, well, then it's your code, right? But every time I wrote code, it was for a customer, it was for a company, they owned the code. I might have written part of it, right, but it wasn't my code. And if you can get over that hurdle, then it's not such an affront to your senses when somebody says that the code that you wrote didn't work, right? Because it's just code.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that's a big one, we were talking about, you know, the hero mentality. One of the big things is to be able to step back from your job for a minute and think about things at a little bit higher level. What does this look like to the organization, right? Is the thing that I'm asking my people to do, is it good for the organization overall? Don't want to sound too much like Office Space, but is it good for the company? Should be something that you're asking yourself quite a bit. And it's something that I don't think people ask enough. People get, and rightly so, they get absorbed in their own bonuses. They get absorbed in their own lifestyle. They get absorbed in their own ideas of what they want their department to look like. And they forget about what the overall strategy of the company is, and what might be best for the company might be less work for them.
Right. So certainly just because you've done it that way in the past doesn't mean you should continue doing it that way.
Absolutely.
And I think if you can, and we're kind of focusing on the developer QA cycle right now, which is okay, because I do want to go back and address the front end of, well, in traditional development, what we call the front end of the cycle, but in Agile, we don't really have a front and a back.
Right? Yeah.
But, you know, certainly
just because that's how you've always tested it, right? You know, you develop for 9 months and then you have a month of QA and then you're supposed to release after that month, and there's no time in there to fix the problems anyway, right? So much more of QA and developer, you know, if you can be sitting together, right?
Yeah.
That's even better, because then the QA person is going to hear the discussions developers are having. And if the QA has a different interpretation of the requirement before the code's even written, your tester can say, I'm not sure that's what that says, right? Yeah. I don't think that word means what you think it means, you know? And you can get those discussions up front and everybody's on the same page. You know, Eric Evans in his domain-driven design book, you know, talks about many, many things. But one of the things that really stuck with me from that is ubiquitous language.
Absolutely.
You know, if we're all on the same page, all speaking the same language, then that's great. Right, but when we have these silos, I always get the impression that we're not talking the same language. Every department has their own dialect, right?
Yeah.
And every fiefdom, as we talked about before, and sometimes it's hard to cross that bridge, right? So I think that's good stuff. Definitely, you know, get your QA and your developers working together, even if it's just at a person level, right? If you can't get the department heads to shake hands and be friends, you know, hopefully they can. But just walk over, right? Don't send an email. If you don't understand something, walk over to the person and just say, hey, Bob or Susie, you know, you filed this bug. I just don't get it, right?
Yeah.
And let's talk about it. And do you agree with that?
An electronic communication is the worst form of communication if you are having a misunderstanding. It's the worst way to try and hash out a misunderstanding via electronic communication of any kind.
Right.
Right? The best thing to do is if you're not co-located, if you happen to be a distributed team, get on the phone with that person, get a Skype call going. If you are co-located in the same building, even if it means taking them to lunch, sit down with them and go, you know, you filed these three bugs and I have no idea what we're talking about here. I thought it was finished based on my understanding of the requirements, but I know that you have a test plan that you have to follow, so let's figure out what needs to be done so that we can get these pieces done. Right.
So the key word I'm hearing here is collaborate, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of we in there.
There's a lot of we in there. It's not just, you know, it's not an us versus them mentality.
Yes. Right?
It's not your code. It's not their tests. It's the company's code. It's the company's test at the end of the day.
Collaboration is essential for your projects. And if you want to bring the communication among all of your team members to the next level, emails just won't help. With the new activity stream from the Telerik's project management tool, Team Pulse, team members will be able to always stay informed about what is happening on their projects and start in-context discussions. Join the conversation now at Telerik.com/Team Pulse.
Well, and to be fair, we as developers, maybe it's being the kind of social misfits that we are, but I think one of the things is we kind of built this wall of collaboration around us. We told people and we designed this system where you tell us what you want and we're going to go away for 18 months and then we'll bring you back the software that you asked for based on our understanding 18 months ago.
Right.
Right. And we've kind of engineered that process to be that way. And we've conditioned our users to think that way. And I've heard you say this a thousand times and I repeat it all the time as if it were my idea, but if you do that with somebody, they're going to think that they have to ask for everything right now because they're not going to get a chance to talk to you for another 18 months. So they got to think of everything right now. Whereas if they know you're going to be doing something again in 2 months or 2 weeks, that's okay if I don't get everything right now. 2 weeks from now, we'll just get the next thing. You know?
Right. You know, along that point, if I'm talking to a user and a user doesn't think I'm going to talk to them for another 18 months or 12 months and then, you know, have another 12-month cycle on top of it, you're going to get requirements like, I need a button on this screen. And it's like, well, what does the button do? Well, I have no idea what the button's going to do, but if I don't ask for that button now, I'm not going to get it for another 24 months. So please let me have that button, right? Because I might need it someday.
Yeah.
So which brings us to, you know, what we would call in waterfall or traditional project management, the beginning of the process. So we've talked about some techniques you can do with the testers and developers, right? Get them together.
Absolutely.
I think it's a little different with the people who are writing the requirements
yeah.
and development, because there is typically a very large gap there. They're used to writing their stuff and then moving on. They might be three projects down the road. You know, if these are big mm-hmm. design up front type projects, it might not even recall, you know, what they wrote in that 200 page document yeah. that nobody reads anyway. So what kind of things can we glean from the different Agile methodologies that can help bridge that gap and break down the barrier to collaboration between the people who are asking for the software and the people who are making it?
Well, one of the things that we've done traditionally is the first thing we try and do is get people to get at least one person from each one of these silos on the team, right? So I've got a project manager on the team. I've got a developer on the team. I've got a designer on the team. I've got a QA person on the team. So everybody has kind of a vested interest. Even if you have more than those people on the team, at least you have a representative from each group that are going to be collaborating very well. It would be great to have all the people meeting all the time or sitting together. That's great, but the biggest thing is just having people from each silo representing their silo and talking to each other. Then you don't have those people who have written the requirements and moved on to another project. I think the requirements of just about any software project are always changing. So having a project manager there or a BA requirements manager there all the time is a good idea because they're going to be changing, and we as developers or QA people are going to need to go back to the customers who originally asked for it and say, what does this mean? Or I think that's going to take a really long time. Would you be okay with something like this instead? Or I'm not sure I understand what you're trying to accomplish with this feature. Or you may be just overreaching. I think customers and BAs are constantly trying to help us by trying to step into our technical shoes and saying, I need a database table for this, or I need a data field for this. When really you find out they didn't really need a database table or a data field for that, they needed an enum for whatever that is. That's just a lookup thing that they never change, right? So I think them trying to help us out sometimes gives bad requirements to us, but it's up to us to go back to them and help ourselves understand. It's on us to get those requirements right.
So I heard a couple things in there I really liked, and I didn't want to interrupt because you were on a roll. But first and foremost, you made a comment about making sure that somebody from each of the silos, right? And I hate the fact that we have silos, but you know, it's reality. We have it. But you get one person from each of those areas on the team. Now, you might have, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 developers on there. And you know, I don't know how many testers you might have assigned to it or things like that, but have a tester there, have a designer there if you're, you know, luxurious enough to have a designer, a real designer on your project, because you know, I'm circles and squares and primary colors and fuchsia. There's only colors. Absolutely. I know.
Battleship Gray is my friend.
Yep. Yeah, unless it's WPF, then it's white, right? purple rabbit there. So, but if you get somebody from each of those areas sitting together, that right there breaks down a lot of those barriers, right? A lot of the barriers that we face between these different groups is a barrier of out of sight, out of mind.
Oh, yeah. I mean, email is one of those things where it's easy to fire off an idea and forget about it, right? And now it's your problem because I've kicked the ball over into your court, right?
Right. I hit send. I don't look in my sent folders very often. I didn't copy myself. So we're moving on. So the other thing that you said that I think was really, really key was, you know, I honestly don't take the stance that BAs or project managers or product owners or whatever you want to call it, business analysts, that type of stuff, I don't think they write bad requirements, right? They're doing the best that they can. I think our problem is we have a bad understanding of their requirements. And I think you said it without saying, I'm going to restate what you said and tell me if I'm right. But we have to stop looking at the means to the end, right? Because a lot of times we will get those types of requirements. We need a table for this. We need a button for this, that type of thing. And we have to look at the end game. Well, what do we want? Well, we want to store user information, right? So we can better communicate with them in the future. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to go to SQL Server or Oracle. You know, maybe you're going to use an object database. Maybe you're going to use Access. I don't know. I don't care, right? But the point is, the real requirement is not that you have a table in SQL Server. The real requirement is that you store customer information so you can get a hold of them.
Yeah.
Right? And if we can look beyond the simple words on the page and think about the spirit of the requirements, right, we can do that. And that's hard to do at times because we're so ingrained, right? They've trained us the way we've trained them.
Yes.
Right? These are the requirements. The test cases are going to be built from these requirements. And if it says there's a table that stores the information, QA is going to be testing to make sure there's a table.
Yeah.
Right?
And traditionally, programmers have been so bad at communicating things to people that BAs have begun to think, if I don't tell him he needs a table there, he's going to think I'm an idiot, right? So they're trying to help us out by giving us more clear requirements because we've been telling them that they've been giving us unclear requirements.
Right. And again, what the clarity needs to be about is the end game, right?
Absolutely.
You know, we talk about, from a development standpoint, a lot of times we talk about software craftsmanship and clean code and things like that. And I'm not belittling those. I don't want to start a flame war here. They're all very important. But at the end of the day, I've never had a customer look at my code.
Yeah.
Right? You know, people who buy from Amazon don't care if it's written in PHP or Rails or .NET or Foo.
Yeah.
For all we care, right? They want it to work. They want it to have a pleasant user experience. And at the end of the day, they want it to make their life easier.
Yeah, and I've had lots of people tell me, you know, Site X, when I say Site X is so great, it always works, it's always fast. And I've had several people tell me first, what site, whatever it is, oh man, I've seen their code and it just really sucks. But the application works just fine. Now, the code sucking is a whole different problem for the developers and their guys to figure out how they're going to pay off that technical debt, which right. is a whole nother show.
Whole nother right? story.
But as long as the application is working and doing what it's supposed to do and the customer's happy and their customers are happy, then as far as I'm concerned, that's a successful software endeavor, right?
Right. And so we get there, again, by breaking down these silos, right?
Yeah.
Which means, just like we did with the testers. Now, Lee and I are both developers, so in case you're wondering why this is, we're focusing on the developer as the center of the universe, because, you know, as we all know it is. Not really. No joke. You know, developers should take it upon themselves. If they don't understand the requirement, don't just move forward and write, you know, mutter under your breath, oh, this is a crappy requirement, and write something because you've got a deadline. Find the person who wrote that requirement, right? Yeah. And talk to them. Again, don't fire off an email.
And if you have to, get them and go talk to the people that they originally got the requirement from and sit down all three of you together until you all three understand. Here's another good rule for collaboration. If I'm a developer and I'm going to, let's say, have a meeting about requirements, I never take just myself. It's always me and one other person. Usually it's me or, well, I've got a coworker that I work with, Troy, who has a lot of the same ideas I do, but sees the world completely different than I do. So a lot of times we'll come out of requirements meetings and I'll go, well, this should be easy to do since all they want is this. And he'll go, wow, that's what you heard? I thought they wanted this. We should probably talk to them some more. So having a second person with a different viewpoint on life, but maybe the same ideas overall how things should get done, is a great way to make sure that you understand the requirements better.
So like pair programming, it's pair communicating.
Yeah.
Right? So make sure that you're not that. Well, and it's true, right? So you don't want to be the silo, right? You don't want to be the single point of failure.
Yeah.
And if you misheard it because, you know, your phone beeped or sirens went by the window and you spent 15 years in the fire service and you have to see what kind of truck it is. Sorry, that was me just, you know, as we started recording this. You know, you don't want to have that momentary lapse of concentration or understanding affect things.
Yeah, right? And you don't want to go off on the wrong direction for a complete requirement. Right.
Right. So we're getting close to the end of our time here, and I want to kind of sum up, and again, tell me if I'm wrong, but what I heard today that people can act on tomorrow after they hear this podcast is check your ego at the door and talk to people. Right. And that kind of sums it up in my mind. And it sounds so simple when you wrap it up that way. But it's things that we don't do. Right.
Well, and it's usually not that simple in a especially in a larger enterprise. Sometimes it's not so simple to just go talk to Jenny over in the BA department, because they've got an entire PMO that they have, a whole PMO politicking system that they have to get through, right? So just walking over to Jenny's desk and talking to her might not be feasible in their organization. And we've, especially as developers, have set up, don't come talk to me while I'm coding, right? So having a BA come and talk to you because they saw something that you put out and said, wow, that's not really what we were talking about at all. Them coming to your desk, they're afraid to, because they've been yelled at before for interrupting the code monkeys as they're running, right? So being able to break down those barriers to say, it's okay for Jenny to come over here and talk to the developers. That's completely fine. I want her to come talk to me if there's something that she doesn't understand or something I did that I obviously don't understand. Come and talk to me about it. I do not mind putting aside what I'm doing for a few minutes while we talk about it if it means a better, clearer understanding of what I'm supposed to be building, right?
So be accessible yourself.
Yeah.
Right? And hopefully the people that you need to work with can make themselves accessible, but lead by example, right?
Absolutely.
So certainly don't, you know, sit there with your headphones on and ignoring everybody who's coming to talk to you because they have questions about what you've done. And, you know, we said check the ego. If somebody comes up to question something that you've done, they're not questioning your value as a person, right? They're asking because they don't understand some of the code you wrote or the requirement that you wrote or the test, you know, or the bug that you filed, right? It's not an attack on you personally. This doesn't seem to work right, right? And so I think there's a valuable lesson there is, everybody has to check their ego, right?
Yeah.
And don't come in and say, you screwed this up. That's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't tend to go over very well.
Right? Yeah, I was going to say, check your ego the other direction, too. You can't just say, well, Jim's a moron. Obviously, this requirement doesn't make any sense. You might go over and talk to Jim and go, oh, well, I was the moron.
Right. Yeah, so certainly be accessible. Check your ego. Understand at the end of the day, everybody's trying to get their job done so they can go home and see their kids play basketball or soccer or football or play Xbox or whatever they do in their own personal time. And they're not out to get you, right?
Generally, everybody wants the company to do well. Everybody wants these things to do well. That's one of the big things that come out of like the old lean manufacturing and stuff. I believe it was Dan North I saw on a talk once say, the difference between Taylorist management and like Deming's idea of management was that Taylor believed that people are generally stupid and lazy, and you need to give them very small tasks and stay on them, otherwise they won't do it. And Deming believed that people were basically good and basically wanted to do a good job, and if you help them and understand that they want to do a good job, then you'll help them find ways to do their job better.
Oh, and I think that's great. You know, at the end of the day, you know, we're all trying to do things better, right? And that's one of the reasons why I think Agile has been so successful and has been growing as rapidly as it has, because it enables us to do things better, right? It gives us the means. You know, when we talk about the pillars of the Agile Manifesto, right? Collaboration over contract negotiation, right? This is exactly what we're talking about. Break down those barriers and lead by example. Be the first person to walk over and say, hat in hand, I don't understand what you're saying here, right?
Yeah.
Or I don't understand this bug, right? And you start off with that, put the onus on yourself, say, I'm not getting it. Can you help me explain? And more often than not, they'll say, I filed this bug because of this, or the requirement reads this way, and they're not going to come at you and say, you're a moron because you can't read, you know, but flip it around. And if you go up to somebody and say, this is the stupidest requirement I've ever seen, right, they're going to get defensive because you have just insulted their work.
Yeah.
Right.
Insulted them personally, right?
And insulted them personally, right? So keep it at a professional level. This has been great. Lee, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast with me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yep, and we'll put contact information for Lee up on the show notes.
Okay.
So you can get a hold of him, Twitter and everything else. And
all right.
You're doing quite some speaking engagements coming up, and so I'm sure they can check your blog for that information and whatnot.
Yep.
And, well, thanks, and enjoy the rest of the MVP Summit.
Oh, I will. Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you for listening.
If you have any comments, concerns, or suggestions, you can reach out to us at telerik.com/zerotoagile. Follow us on Twitter at @zerotoagile, or send us an email at zerotoagile@telerik.com. See you next time. Thank you.